Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the By Yahweh's Design conference call for the 15th day of January, year 2020. I am Commander Dan, your host and chairman for this meeting of the House of Jacob Israel. The agenda for today's call is Meet Mike Brown, a Real Warrior. And we dedicate this call to our Heavenly Father Yahweh, who is the great I Am. We also dedicate this call to His holy remnant, who are the believing sons and daughters of Jacob, who was later named Israel. Today, these people are known as the Caucasian, or the true Israelite peoples of the world. Hallelujah, which means all praise Yahweh in ancient or Paleo-Hebrew. To my Welsh kinsmen across the ocean, Shumai, and welcome to the program. Cumru Ambeth. Callers are welcome. We do ask that you remember to keep your language cleaned up a bit. We do have young folks that listen in from time to time. And we also ask that you be careful not to walk on other callers that might be on the line at the same time. We are in the question and answer mode, which means that everybody calling in will be muted until such time as they notify me via their phone, which is *6, or their computer by pressing on the Ask Question button. Our website is www.pastordan, and that's all together, no spaces, pastordan.net. And again, Mike and I tried this out a couple of days ago, and everything worked fine. But as of yet, I don't see Mike on the call. We got, a few things that are coming up that are pretty darn important. There's a lot going on right now. Well, this might be Mike right here. Hold on just a second. Area code 417, is that you, Mike? Oops, wait a minute. This thing is cantankerous as hell. Okay, now, Mike, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So how are you doing tonight, sir?
Oh, pretty good. And yourself?
Oh, I'm hanging in there with all the stuff that's going on. Sometimes it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot just to handle it, but I've been telling folks about you coming on. It's been a long time since you and I did a program together, but I had a lot of fun back in 2002 or so when we last did a show. I think it was about 2002 or somewhere around that period of time. A lot of water over the dam since then, so most everybody here is new. So if you don't mind taking a few minutes, Mike, to just kind of introduce yourself to everybody and let them know who you are and how you got to where you are.
Okay, well, not a whole lot to tell. I got locked up back in the 70s, and I was doing a 25-year prison sentence, and I got it knocked down to 10, and then I got that knocked down to 5, and got out in about 3.5 years with good time and didn't snitch on anybody. But basically, it's where I went to law school. I kind of jokingly refer to it as Penn State for penitentiary. And I've been pretty much getting people out of prison ever since then.
Yeah, I remember that. You've written a lot of books and everything. We're going to give folks contact information here later on in the broadcast, so make sure you have a pencil and pen handy for his website. Mike's website, he's also got books there for sale. And I think I've got, I don't think I have everything you've written, but I do know I used your Brown's Lawsuit cookbook back when I filed a suit against the state of Ohio all over driver's licenses and registration, all that nonsense. And then I did a program, I think, based on your one book. I think it's called Prison's Bloody Iron.
Oh, yeah, my partner Jinx and I wrote that back in 1978, and just went out of print here a couple of years ago. You can still get them on the internet. They're fairly cheap.
Yeah, that was an eye-opening book. For folks that don't know anything about knife fighting, I would recommend they go to Mike's website and get a copy, because it taught me a lot of things. Some of it I knew that, you know, Hollywood and television and all that nonsense, you can't go by anything they present on their movies and sitcoms and stuff as being real. But a lot of the common sense things you guys talked about in that book, you know, it made a lot of sense. And I've talked to an awful lot of young men, even some military guys, telling them about what was in there. And I think it's helped keep some guys from getting themselves seriously hurt. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, because most of the people up until the time Jinx and I came along, people writing books on knife fighting had been trained in fencing. And you try to use a fencing technique in a knife fight, and you're probably going to lose your hand and maybe a few other things.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, if you don't mind. Go ahead and tell the folks what your website is.
Well, the problem is it's not my website. It was run by my favorite ex-wife, but then she had a stroke. So anybody wants to get in touch with me or see the books that I've got, they just need to go to Peter Simpson, and that's area code 320, and the number is, what is that number? 857-2400. It's also on there. If you go on the email, go on Google, I think it's Rommel Law, and he sells a lot of the books I've written, and he sells this, you know, videos of some of the seminars I've done, primarily on the legal system.
Okay, so that's Peter Simpson.
Yeah, S-I-M-P-S-O-N. Yeah, it's RommelLaw.com or www and all that. Or you just go to his telephone number, area code 320-857-2400. And he sends out, I think, like a free info pack. I mean, if you just call him up and ask him, he'll send you a DVD with all kinds of stuff on it.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm taking notes as you're saying this, so I can put it up on my website and also send it out by email. I've got email people now. It's up over 500 on my list. And the thing I like about it is most of the people on my list, are they themselves part of organizations or think tanks or groups of patriots, whatever. So it's kind of neat to know that it's going to go out there and possibly reach tens of thousands of people eventually. But, okay, very good. Peter Simpson, RommelLaw.com, and you say he'll send a DVD, and that's also where you would go to get your books. Now, I went to the website, and they still have a list there of your books. So is that still accurate, that list that's on the website?
Well, which website did you go to?
I think it says Brown's Law Resources or something like that.
Oh, well, does it say Brown's Legal Research?
Yeah, that's it. Maybe that's
okay,
it.
Yeah. Now, that's run by a gal named Betty Coleman out of St. Charles, Missouri. You know, she sells some of my books, too, and quite frankly, she gets her books from Peter Simpson.
Oh, okay.
So, small world.
You know. Yeah. I remember we did a review of your one book. I'm going by memory here. Let's see. Sex, Power, and Money, The Bible Shows You the Way. I think that's the title of it.
Yeah, Sex, Money, and Power, The Bible Shows You How.
Yeah, that's it. It shows you how.
Yeah, and the irony of it is, it actually does. I mean, the Bible's an Aladdin's lamp if you know how to read it and how to use it, but almost nobody does.
No, that's true. I think that's a... People are starting to wake up to the fact that this country, and I think you'll agree, this country's lost its moral rudder completely. And it's nice to see a lot of these mainstream ministries are now starting to talk about the fact that the church is pretty much impotent, the organized church, not believers like us that are out here kind of like on our own turf, but the organized churches, mainstream, if you want to call them that, they're pretty much bankrupt and impotent as far as having an effect on what's going on in this world. And and it's because we've lost our moral underpinnings. Or would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's just it's not the same world that it was when I grew up back in the 50s. You know, when I went into the Army in 1960, you had a military obligation. Today you have a career opportunity. And it kind of goes downhill from there. It's, you know, for example, back in the 60s, you had obligations. Back in the 80s, it went to the me first generation. And now, what I'm seeing all over the place, it's the no thought of consequences generation. Yeah, you know, I mean, how can you be thinking of consequences if you're playing video games all day long?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I worked with a guy. I've told this story to some of the folks. I worked with a guy up in Michigan about 10 years ago. And he was in his later 20s at that time. And he was a big strapping kid from Alaska originally. And this was up in Michigan. And he was bellyaching about not having a girlfriend. His name was Fred. And one day I said, well, what's Fred's problem? And they said, well, he works here at the power plant, and we put in usually about 10 hours a day. He goes home, he fixes a bite to eat, and he sits down in front of his computer and eats his dinner and doesn't get up from in front of his computer until it's time to go to bed. Then he goes to bed, he gets up, and he repeats this scenario day in and day out. I says, well, how the hell does he think he's going to find a girlfriend if he's doing that every day? Unless he wants a virtual girlfriend over a digital girlfriend. But he couldn't. I mean, that's how, I guess you'd say, ignorant some people are today. They spend their entire lives in front of a damn computer and a flat screen, and they don't know how to deal with reality. At least that's the way it seems to me. You know, you've got a few years on me, but how does it look to you? I mean, is there any hope for this generation?
I don't know. I've got a son. He's an electrical engineer, and he came over one night and he says, "Dad," he says, "I've figured out the ideal way to get a girlfriend." I said, "What's that?" He says, "I'm going to do like these fat broads do." Okay, he says, "I'm going to run an ad on the internet about, you know, unemployed loser living in mother's basement, living on soda pop and chips, video game addict, wants to meet supermodel." How much of a chance do you think he... And I told, you know, we both had a big yuck over that. But then he finally got married, but he went over to Ukraine to find a girl because so many of them here are basically just, you know, women are just as bad as the men in a lot of respects.
Yeah, I've heard some of the teenagers that walk by where my office is here, and the language I'm hearing out of these young people's mouth, I didn't hear language like that until I was in the Air Force and 19 years old. I couldn't believe what... And these are kids that are probably anywhere from 10 to 14 years old, and boys and girls. And it's just unbelievable. It's like, well, they have, you know, no filter.
Yeah, well, we used to have a way to straighten people up like that, but they discontinued it. It was called the draft. And boy, it's amazing how many people could get drafted and come out like, oh, okay, now I know how to do what I'm told.
Well, yeah.
We don't have that anymore.
Yeah, I know. In basic training, when I was in there, we lost, I think, three or four guys that couldn't take the demands on them. And this is back in the 70s. Couldn't take the demands of basic training, so they opted out with the I smoked marijuana option. Back then, all you had to do is say, "I smoked marijuana," and you immediately got a general discharge and sent home. I played football in high school. I played baseball. I played summer league ball. So I was used to coaches because I started in seventh grade and I played all the way to a year in college. So I had an awful lot of coaches that were hitting me over the helmet with clipboards or kicking me in the ass with their boots. It didn't mean anything to me. I realized that that's just the way it's done. When you performed well, you got a pat on the head and you know, good job. And when you screwed up, you got a boot up your butt or you got a clipboard wrapped upside your helmet. So basic training for me was pretty much a walk in the park compared to football coaches and what they can put you through. But there, it was surprising to me, even in the 70s, how many so-called men couldn't handle it. I mean, we called them mama's boys. You know, they had never had anybody yell at them. They never had anybody make them make their bed or fold their clothes. And, you know, I had strict parents and coaches and everything, so it was nothing for me. But can you imagine what it's like today? I mean, if that's the way it was back when you and I were military age, can you imagine what's going on in the military today?
Oh, it's worse than you think. World War II, 25% of the men who were drafted were 4F. They couldn't use them. Today, drive past one of these high schools and see all these sad sacks with their pants hanging down to their butt and their, you know, cuffs dragging on the ground and all that sort of thing. Today, the percentage of men who cannot qualify for military service between the ages of 18 and 26 is 71%.
Whoa!
Yeah. You know, if we ever have a major war with a country that can actually fight back, we're going to lose it because we don't have the manpower.
Well, that brings up a good point, Mike. Let me ask you, because you're a veteran and you've been through the school of hard knocks more so than most people I know. But a lot of people seem to think we have an invincible army and we have an invincible military. Well, can I ask your opinion on that? When people say things like that, do you agree with that?
Well, my question to you is, that's what we had or have, how did we manage to lose the Vietnam War?
Well, part of that is we weren't meant to win it.
Well, that's true, too, yeah.
You know, that people bring up that part of it, and I know what they're trying to get at, but, and I know because I was part of the Vietnam era conflict. And I know what they're trying to say, but in defense of the guys, they weren't meant to win anyway. Most of the people in the field, they had their hands tied behind their back because of the politicians and the political generals. So, but if we, like you said, if we actually got into a war with a real military that's all about winning and not about playing politics and political correctness, you know, and taking the wimpy generals and admirals and the political hacks out of the picture, do you think if our military was led by real men, we'd have a fighting chance today?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. At the NCO level and the, you know, lower officer level, there's still some really good guys. But the problem is you get up to these, you know, field grade officers and above, like majors, colonels, generals, and a lot of them are more politician than soldier.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like all this business about sensitivity training and all that because they've got women on board warships and you know, they're looking at them for combat units now. Well, it's not where they belong. And, I mean, you'll see some people that are really good soldiers. I mean, they really know what they're doing. But the leadership, I think they call it a command failure. And, of course, it wasn't that much better when I was in because the truth is we had some real idiots that were officers. And apparently some of them were so hated that in Vietnam they got fragged.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about that on the air quite a bit. A lot of people don't know that. But yeah, when I was in the service, between servicemen, we used to talk about it quite a bit, because we'd hear about it. And it's, and a lot of that though, again, is the upper command structure's fault because they would take these butter bars and silver barred, lieutenants and young captains who only got their commissions because they came out of a college. Had no leadership skills whatsoever, and they put a uniform on them and put them in charge of hardened veterans out in the jungle. And the guys in the jungle knew these rookies were going to get them killed.
And, well, you also had the great squad leader in the sky, where, you know, some major would be 2,000 feet up in the air, trying to move people like chessboards, telling them, "Oh, you know, you've got to make more time. You've got to go down this trail instead of going through the bushes." And like one poor guy, he tried to tell this major that, you know, the paths, the beaten paths, are mine. That's why I'm taking these guys through the jungle. No, you have to do it this way. I think this guy had about 15 of his men blown up because of this idiot major. In fact, there's a really good book by Colonel David Hackworth about FACE, and he really shows what happened to the Army. I mean, I couldn't figure it out, because when I went in June of 1960, I was only 17 years old. I loved it. It was Boy Scout camp with guns. But by the time I got out in June of 64, it was a bureaucracy with guns, and I couldn't figure out, what are these people doing and why are they doing it? And one of the things that I came across, you ever hear a book called Dog Soldiers?
No.
Okay,
no.
Really good book. All right, I read it about 1971. Because I couldn't figure out, I mean, years after I got out, I'm thinking, you know, what they're doing doesn't make any sense. And in this book, it was a fiction book. Of course, if you'd read it as an expose, he'd been assassinated. He pointed out that the reason we had ground troops in Vietnam, because the CIA was losing control of the narcotics traffic in the Golden Triangle. And that's the same reason we're in Afghanistan. Like, when Pat Tillman got killed by his own troops, what he was guarding, what he was doing over there, and he'd written to his mother saying, "Hey, you know, there's something wrong here. We're supposed to be here over here fighting the Taliban, and what we're actually doing is guarding poppy fields." Well, there's a real good reason for that, too, because in Afghanistan, a kilo of heroin goes for about $120. Streets in New York, it goes for $250,000.
Wow.
You know, a really good way to finance an operation. In fact, I had a good buddy. Oh, I don't know where he is these days, but he pointed out to me once that the French Riviera, every other house is owned by either a retired DEA or CIA agent. Where do you think that money came from?
Yeah, exactly. Well, how about these Jews like, I can't think of it now, what the hell's his name? Dev Zakheim? The one that talked about the missing $3 trillion right before 9/11, just missing out of the defense budget. It's just gone. We don't know where it's at. And then recently, a few years back, a similar statement was made about $10 trillion that they can't find. I mean, Mike, do they really think we're that stupid? I mean, you don't just misplace $1 trillion.
Well, you do if you work for the government. You can't do it anywhere else. I mean, like, you know, when I was in Lewisburg, and it's top to bottom, and it isn't, you know, I realize you got to, you know, you're not real fond of Jews, but like I told you on the email before, yeah, assume they're the maggots of civilization. Maggots don't attack healthy organisms.
Right.
And if you read Deuteronomy, in fact, my favorite ex-wife is in a nursing home, so I go over there every day and I read her, you know, a few passages that I've summarized from the Bible. And if you go through like 27 and 28 Deuteronomy, he just tells you over and over and over again, if you don't play by the rules, you're going to get the schnitzel. And it happened. I mean, time and time and time again. So, I mean, to me, if you want to talk about something really evil, let's talk about federal judges.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They are the worst. And here's the real irony. You've got a thing for the Second Amendment, correct?
Correct.
Well, so do I, but they took away my Second Amendment rights with an act of Congress called Title 18, Section 922, Paragraph G, Felon in Possession. Yeah, back in the 70s, I did 3.5 years behind the barbed wire, you know, as a guest of Big Brother. But when I came out, from that day to this, I'm not allowed to own a firearm. And if I want to take the chance, I'm looking at 10 years federal prison time. And here's the real problem. And this is what everybody's missed. The Second Amendment quite plainly says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, where does it say, because bear in mind that statute I just quoted you, that's felon in possession, you know, ex-cons aren't allowed to own firearms. Where does it say in the Second Amendment that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed unless they have a felony conviction? Where does it say that?
It doesn't.
Well, exactly. And there's another Supreme Court case, Myers versus United States, from 1927 that tells you quite plainly, there's more recent cases say the same thing, Congress cannot merely by legislating amend the Constitution. They do it all the time. I mean, we keep electing these idiots, and quite frankly, you vote for the present members of Congress, or you have any respect for the federal judiciary, you pretty well asked for it.
That brings up a point. Do you think we actually elect anybody anymore? I mean, ever since computerized voting came out, I've been pretty much convinced it's rigged. What do you think about that?
No, we actually do elect people. I mean, a lot of states are going back to paper ballots. Missouri happens to be one of them. They don't do that, you know, stuff here. The biggest problem we've got is that people don't know who's causing the problem. Okay, let me give you an example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Senate Judiciary Committee. They confirm somebody to be a federal judge, okay? Now, could you do this? Could you be confirmed by the Senate, put on the robe, sent to the bench, the whole bit? You take an oath to support the Constitution, okay? Constitution includes a Second Amendment. Now, here comes some poor slob in front of you, felon in possession, looking at 10 years, okay? Now, what are you going to do? Are you going to send him to prison, or are you going to tell him, no, that law's unconstitutional, have a nice day, go home? Which one are you going to do?
Well, what they do is they go with the flow.
The problem is, though, when you violate an oath, okay,
mm-hmm.
basically what that tells people is you're a two-faced slime bucket, okay? And that's what we have in the federal judiciary. In fact, there's a really good book out by a gal named Sidney Powell. She was a former assistant United States attorney, and she wrote a book titled Licensed to Lie, Exposing Corruption in the Department of Justice. And you can read about this one judge he was butting heads with in Houston named Werlein. And I've run into one judge after another like this jerk. And what they do is they put their thumb on the scales in order to make sure that you get convicted and the government wins. Well, you know, a constitution or laws, they're only as good as the people that enforce them. And the people we've got enforcing, these federal judges, who one day take an oath to support the Constitution and then violate it the next day, what kind of a fair shake you think you're going to get from people like that?
Oh, you're not. It's becoming more and more obvious. They're criminals. Well, you know, that brings up a point. I've been trying to educate people on this for quite some time. Because, like you said, they take this oath, but are you familiar with the Kol Nidre prayer that's in...
Yeah, let all our oaths not be oaths and all that, but Dan, just like I said a few minutes ago, yeah, you know, it doesn't matter how evil they are, okay, if they are that evil, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Maggots don't attack healthy organisms, and what you're going to find is most of the problems we've got is because we've got people who don't care, who aren't paying attention, who think themselves wiser than God. You know, I would much rather have somebody to answer to who's evil, because at least then you can figure out what it is he wants and how to bribe him. You can't bribe a moron.
Hmm. Yeah.
You know. And these,
well,
these
go ahead.
These federal judges, I'll give you an example. I had a buddy named Larry Boland. He's dead now. They killed him in prison by switching up his medication. But he was in front of a judge named Richard Story in Atlanta. And the guy he worked for had a book business. He'd amassed about $3 million of the coins, jewels, cash. cars, guns, things like that. And these two guys got indicted for selling books through the mail because a federal prosecutor thought, oh, these books have no value, so therefore it has to be mail fraud. Okay? Not a word about the First Amendment. Couldn't even get them to admit that such an animal existed. They inventoried this $3 million in Atlanta. When it got down to Miami and was re-inventoried again, it had shrunk to $2.7 million. Got a buddy who's an engineer. He flew a load of marijuana into Minneapolis many years ago. 640 pounds, two 320-pound bales. When it went to trial, one of the bales was missing.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Got another one, okay? Guy named Martin Susie's in Chicago. He watches his brother load 10 kilos of cocaine into a BMW. They drive it to Cleveland, you know. Now, Susie wasn't involved, and he tried to tell the judge there in Cleveland that, you know, this is, my brother was using my ID. It's not me. It's him. And by the way, there's 5 kilos of cocaine on the indictment. I watched him load it. There were 10. What happened to the other 5? You have no idea how many federal judges, prosecutors, FBI agents, and the like have their hand in the cookie jar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, since you and I last talked, I had an acquaintance in Michigan, a young lady who, when she was 14 years old, ran away from home, and she had a uncle who was in Detroit, and he was a drug dealer. So she ran away from home. She lived on the streets for a couple weeks in Detroit, and she realized that she probably was going to die if she stayed there. So she finally looked up this guy, and he put her up for a while. But she said one of the things that she found very ironic is, you know, he told her to keep her mouth shut, just stay out of the way, you know, over here because I'm going to be doing business. She goes, you would not believe the number of lawyers, prosecutors, and cops that came up there to buy their drugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, basically, it's like, oh, here's an interesting thought, okay? Remember, we had Prohibition from 1920 to about 1933. Now, we had to have a constitutional amendment to outlaw narcotic drugs, okay? That was repealed. Now, there's case law, there's published decisions written by federal judges themselves that alcohol is a drug. It's just not on the list of controlled substances. Now, my question is, where's the constitutional amendment to outlaw narcotic drugs?
Yeah, good point.
Well, I mean, look, in some other countries, hell, they got junkies shooting up on the police station steps. Well, that's the way it should be. Because if the stuff's cheap, then the junkies don't have to go rob and steal and all that to get their supply.
Well, you know why they want to keep the price high. Because many of the people in our so-called government and law enforcement are part of the problem. They're part of the group that's making money off this whole thing.
Well, yeah, just like I explained about Afghanistan a few minutes ago.
Right.
Yeah,
it's sick.
The same. Yeah, yeah, it's just... Now, what we really, in fact, you know, all these people that are squealing about Trump and, you know, how he, you know, he's going to wreck the country and this, that, and the other. You know what I think he may have in mind?
Yeah, tell me.
His third term may be as a dictator.
You know, that's ironic. That's amazing. I just watched Rick Wiles with True News right here in Vero Beach, Florida, him and his two co-hosts. And that was the very thing at the end of their show they were talking about. And they showed clips where Trump has been talking, and he makes it like he's joking, but he does this. That's part of the programming. Make it like you're telling a joke, but you're embedding that idea in the minds. And we've got people that are Trump-tards and occultists. He's got a cult following now, and I agree with you at this point. I don't think he has any intentions of stepping down, and I believe that the left intentionally, because they're just two sides of the same coin, the left and the right, the Democrats and Republicans, the job of the Democrats is to be as crazed and imbecilic as they can to drive the herd behind Trump the whole time. Trump is the one they wanted in there anyway. He's going to lead us right into a dictatorship.
Well, you know, you consider the government we've had up until now, there's a lot of people who are just going to tell you, who cares?
Go ahead.
Let me give you an example, okay? And I ran into this over 20 years ago, because bear in mind, I've been getting people out of prison since 1974. I've been at this for about 46 years. And one of the things I used to ask people, okay, here's your choice. Would you rather have the constitutional republic that we're supposed to have now, okay, and a legal system like the one we have now, which for the most part is dysfunctional, okay, or would you rather have an Adolf Hitler in a court system that worked? Be amazed at how many people would vote for Adolf Hitler.
Well, I might be one of them.
yeah, okay.
The thing of it is, I've studied a lot of the writings of academics, and everybody agrees, including the fact that Yahshua, when he returns, is coming back as a beneficial monarch. The most efficient form of government you can possibly have is a beneficial monarchy, because that eliminates this quagmire we have today. But you have to have steps, or not steps, but safeguards to ensure that it remains a elected beneficial monarch rather than a dictatorship. Dictatorships are not good.
Well, actually, it didn't make any difference either way, because like this friend of mine I was telling you about earlier, what he pointed out to me 35 years ago, he says, Brown, he said, you know, democracy, republic, they're the worst form of governments there are. I said, well, why is that? He said, well, it's real simple. He said, if you've got a monarch who's got absolute power, he already owns everything. You can't bribe him.
Right.
So, but there's nothing you and I can do about it. I mean, my whole thing is I want to see how many federal judges I can scrape off the bench. I've got three of them so far, and that only leaves me 797 to go.
If we could just put you in a replicator and knock out a couple thousand, and then we're good to go.
Well, actually, that's going to happen anyway, because there's a guy up in Canada doing a TV program, reality TV program. He's calling it Taking Back Justice, and the whole idea is to hold federal judges up to ridicule, because that's the one weapon that nobody can withstand. I mean, how would you like to be a federal judge, and you wake up one morning and you think you're cock of the walk and you're king of the hill and you've got all this power, and you see yourself on television being held up that you're a blithering idiot? How many people do you think can take that kind of heat?
No, not too many, especially today.
Yeah, in fact, there's one down in Florida, the case I'm working on, for a guy named Michael Barr, okay? And I told Michael Barr, the guy I'm working for, I said, you know, with the name this judge has got, he's got to be a jerk. The judge's name is Mike Brown.
Seriously?
Yeah, and he's a Trump appointee, and he is a complete jerk. And if I can get, you know, the client in line, then there's a good possibility. Yeah, he was confirmed by the Senate last year, and I'm thinking by sometime this year, if my guy does what I tell him to do, I'll scrape this jerk off the bench and replace him with somebody who'll actually do what he's supposed to do.
Wow, that would be nice.
Well, I had this one judge out of Minneapolis, and I got a good buddy who hates him, as you know, even more than I do. His name is Patrick J. Schiltz. He used to be a law professor. And I did a motion on the juror's oath, because what these judges tell you, they turn to the jury, and they tell them, now, you're here to judge the facts. You must obey the laws I give it to you. And they lead the jury to believe that that's the law, but it's not. I mean, there's case law saying that jury instructions are merely helpful suggestions. So this idiot, when we submitted the motion, in fact, I ghostwrote it for his attorney, pointing out that, that there is no foundation for this, not in the Constitution, not in statutes enacted by Congress, not in rules promulgated by the Supreme Court. In other words, it comes out of a book written by a bunch of bureaucrats in D.C., and this idiot Schultz, rather than admit what the truth was, he quoted an Arizona state case addressing an Arizona statute, and he used it in a federal case in Minnesota. I mean, there's 10-year-olds that know better than that.
Well, wasn't there a retiring Supreme Court justice who said there were no competent trial attorneys in America after his career?
Scalia or somebody like that, or Alito. Yeah, it was what. In fact, wait a minute. No, it might have been one of the liberals that said that from like back in the 70s.
That's what I'm thinking. It was one of the more liberal ones, and he said that in his opinion after a career on the Supreme Court of the United States was there were no competent trial attorneys in America.
Yeah, well, now there's also no competent federal judges in America.
Wow.
I mean, every time you turn around, there was one, Alex Kaczynski, out of the Ninth Circuit. Mm-hmm. I got a couple of letters from him. I had a little correspondence with him. I mean, this guy had the Second Amendment wired, but the sex police got him.
Oh.
They got onto his private emails, which he thought were private, and spread it all over the place. And so the sex police forced him into retirement. And this guy, Kaczynski, if he were to replace William Barr as Attorney General of the United States, the odds are a whole lot of these things would be straightened up.
Yeah, well, that's why they'll never let him anywhere near a position of power. This country's bad shape.
They did let him near a position of power. He was the chief judge of the Ninth Circuit. It's the most powerful circuit in the country. And he was the chief judge. And if you read he wrote a dissenting opinion on the Second Amendment, and he pointed out that, judges treat the Second Amendment like a used gum wrapper. And he said, this business of disarming, he said, it's a thing that a free people, they can only make that mistake once.
Hmm.
So, in fact, I wrote a book titled The Criminal Defendant's Bible. And if you get on the internet, we were selling them for like $50 a piece, went out of print. I've got to bring it back up to speed and get it back into production. Get on the internet. You'll see people asking like $250 to $1,400 for that book.
Yeah, I did. I did do a search when I was putting your list of books together. And I was shocked. Even on things like Amazon, Abe Books, Barnes & Noble, you're right. There were some people that thought that thing was made of gold.
Yeah, I wish I could have got that kind of money out of that book. I wrote it.
Oh, my gosh. That's... I'll tell you what. Hey, are you up for taking calls?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, okay, because we got a caller here from Florida, and if I can get this damn software to work right. Tommy, can you hear me?
Yes.
Ah, good. Worked the first time this time. Welcome to the program, Tommy. We've got Mike Brown on with us tonight.
Very cool, very cool. All right, one second here. Yes, I'm just by the house real quick. To the call. So I just heard real quick about some judge.
You're breaking up, Tommy. Can you hear me? I can't hear you. You stepped out of the house. It sounds like you lost your signal. Okay, I heard a little bit, but not much.
Hello?
Okay, you're there now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, off and on.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm walking outside the house, and it's probably Wi-Fi kicking in and out. Can you hear me better now?
Now I can, yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I was going to say is I just hopped onto the call, and I only just heard what Mr. Brown was saying about some chief judge making some dissenting opinion. Was he talking about William Barr?
No.
Well, I know about William Barr. He's a swamp creature.
Oh, he's a piece of filth. I can't stand that guy.
You're being kind.
Okay. I despise that guy. Reading in a letter from Gun Owners of America, they said that William Barr is trying to put a national registry together with the ATF, which is illegal because Reagan signed into law that prohibits the government from creating a registry other than NFA items.
Well, the problem is laws can be changed, and they usually are, and usually for the worse.
Yeah.
Well, okay, that brings up a good point. We're disintegrating rapidly at this point, especially with what's going to happen in less than a week up in Virginia. West Virginia has now stepped in and offered the sanctuary counties and sanctuary cities to leave Virginia and become part of West Virginia. You know what kind of a turmoil that'll create. But mm-hmm. at this point in time, again, maybe I'm being simplistic here, but the system's broke. When do we say enough is enough and realize that state constitutions and the federal constitution and common sense and our God-given rights tell us that at some point when this kind of stupidity and idiotic behavior happens and tyranny happens, we have to walk away. These people have violated their oaths, therefore they're operating under the color of law. They don't have a right to be in government when you violate the oath of office. So when do we walk away and decide that we're going to take back this country, even if it's by force? I mean, that's what our ancestors did. It took a show of force and wrestled control of our destiny out of a tyrant's hands and put it in our own. Well, this oligarchy's operating just like that tyranny back then. The insanity and the stupidity, it's just mind-bending at this point. So how much more do we take of this before we have to realize that we have to organize and come up with a better way? We got to go down a different path because this one's a dead-end street. Does that make sense? I'll start with Mike. What do you think, Mike?
Well, it's closer than you think to being corrected, and here's why. Okay. Do you know what the largest voting bloc is in the United States?
I would think it's white males.
No.
What is it?
It's families and friends of the convicted.
Really?
Really?
Yes. Really. In fact, you go all the way back 30 years ago. The FBI had records of 24 million of us with felony convictions 30 years ago. Okay? Now, everybody that's had a felony conviction normally has about 5 people that would vote to help them out if they knew that it would. Okay? You know, brother, sister, father, mother, cousins, fellow gang members, it doesn't really matter. Because if you have, let me prove this to you here in a minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you had 24 million people, now you multiply that by 5 people who would vote to help those 24 million, that's 120 million. There aren't even 50% more than that in the voting pools, okay?
Right.
The problem is the people with the felony convictions and their families, they don't know that they're the largest voting bloc, okay? And once that becomes known and they understand, the solution is very simple. You want to change the laws and how they're applied? You change the lawmakers. Okay? Mm-hmm. And the minute that happens on a massive, you know, countrywide scale, and it's already happened. I'll give you a couple of examples here. Do you remember when Arnold Schwarzenegger became governor of California?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah. Well, he replaced a guy named Gray Davis, and Gray Davis was an idiot, all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Gray Davis beat Dan Lundgren, who was the attorney general of the state of California. And Lundgren slaughtered him in every debate and every which way. But Gray Davis won, and the reason he won, because I was in contact with people, bear in mind what I do for a living, okay, and they were calling me up and telling me that they were telling all their friends and family to go out and register to vote because Lundgren was the author of the three strikes law. You know, you got busted for stealing a bicycle and bag of cookies later on and then something else. Three strike laws, you're looking at 25 to life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what these guys in prison and gals, what they were doing is they were writing their friends and family on the street telling them, please register to vote because if this guy gets in, we'll never get out. Okay? That's what swung the election in California. That's why Gray Davis beat Dan Lundgren. And we had the same thing here in Missouri a few years back. We had, I forget this guy's name. It'll come to me in a minute. He was the governor. And we had, he was up against Bob something or other. He's up against a guy named Jim Talent. Now, Jim Talent was the favorite to win, okay?
Mm-hmm.
To win the governor's race. Bob Holden, that was his name, okay? Anyway, Bob Holden and Jim Talent are going head-to-head. Well, now, Jim Talent gets on a radio program here in Springfield, and people ask him about, well, what are you going to do about the court corruption in this state? And he says, well, I'm not going to do anything because of separation of powers. I mean, this moron thought he already had it in the bag. Now, here was the fly in the ointment. There was a prison activist named Larry Rice. Larry Rice and I've been up to his place a few times. And Larry Rice got on the ballot as an independent. And here's what happened. Larry Rice drained enough votes from Jim Talent to switch the election to Bob Holden because Jim Talent advertised his uselessness. You know, there was all sorts of families and friends of the convicted who might have voted for him, but they voted for Larry Rice instead. Now, here's the kicker. Larry Rice got 2% of the vote, which was twice what all the other third-party candidates got put together. And that's just been the tip of the iceberg. You watch when the population understands that the largest voting blocks, families and friends of the convicted, and if they want the laws changed, you change the lawmakers, it's all over, and it can happen in a single election.
Wow. I can imagine with so many laws on the books, so much corruption, the number of people with convictions has to be astronomical. But I didn't realize it was that money. It does make sense.
It's tens of millions. In fact, in Missouri, it's gotten so bad that when you go to look for a job here, they don't ask you if you've ever been convicted of a felony. They just ask you if you've been convicted of a felony within the last 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. All right. And I'll give you another example, okay?
Uh-huh.
I got a friend named Steve Holly. He's a Trump voter, okay? So we're sitting at the breakfast table one morning. I said, Steve, let me ask you this. This is when Hillary was running against Trump. I said, now, if you had a choice, you know, you've got a choice. This was before the last election. Who are you going to vote? Well, Trump, of course. I said, okay, now, what if Hillary came out and said that she was going to restore the Second Amendment rights of everybody with felony convictions? Oh, what would I vote for? You know, I hate to admit it, so would I. I mean, if the bitch gives me my right to own guns back, yeah, I'll vote for it and hold my nose.
Hmm. Wow. You know,
people don't vote because of who you are. They vote for what you're going to do for them.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's missed.
Yeah. Well, I know. First of all, I've always been of the opinion if you have been released from prison, then you are to be restored all your rights because that's if you're safe enough to come back into society, then who the hell are they to say you don't have rights? I mean, that's bullshit.
Well, some states do, like, you know, Minnesota, you can get all your rights back. And I mean, there are some states, but not with the feds. With the feds, you've been branded with a scarlet letter. You have a conviction, and there's all sorts of things you can't do. You can't own guns. You can't sit on a jury. You can't sit on a grand jury. You can't even get a job at the post office. In other words, you've basically become a second-class citizen. And the only reason is because the most powerful voting bloc doesn't recognize its own power.
That's amazing. Well, if that voting bloc wakes up, it might make a change. But at this point in time, with everything that's going on, I just saw an article where the Kansas legislature was led off in National Guard vehicles to a military base for a special briefing. I think it was today or yesterday. Excuse me. And that's pretty close to the area where all these mysterious drones have been seen flying around. So, you know, what's your gut feeling about where we're at, what's going to happen? I mean, ideally, you're right, that, you know, within the system, we'd wake the hell up and start making significant changes to make this a better place. I don't know if we have enough time for that right now. I mean, I'll ask Tommy first, but, you know, what do you see from now to 2 years from now, over that period of time? What's your gut feeling about what's going to happen?
Problem's going to solve itself.
Think so?
I think so too. Yeah, I think it's going to what do they say? Is Mother Nature corrects herself all the time. So I think as we're seeing the things unfolding in Virginia, you have the communist. He's so scared that he's waving his little pen and banning anybody carrying firearms or any kind of weapons at all. So, which pretty much means they're going to be doing checkpoints. And the amount of animosity towards authorities now, especially because of how corrupt the laws are, it's not going to be pretty, because all it's going to take is one person to lose their cool. That's one person.
Well, the one person does that all the time. I mean, they have people that, you've heard of the expression going postal.
Yep.
And you've got people that walk into lawyers' offices and blow up half a dozen lawyers away. That doesn't accomplish anything.
No.
In other words, you know, if you're going to accomplish anything major, it takes troops and a lot of them. But the beauty of it is, with the system we've got, if people just use it properly, I mean, our ancestors left us things that worked, and unfortunately, what they built was a guided missile cruiser, or the equivalent of it. We've stuffed it with chimpanzees.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I'm personally of the opinion, and so were several high-ranking military people I've interviewed over the years, Benton Parton being one of them, and Colonel Don de Grand Pre being another one, but they were of the opinion that we are the victims of an outright communist insurgency. And by God, it sure as hell seems like it to me. So if that's the case, I mean, what options do we have? How do we fix it within the system if this is a Bolshevik insurgency?
Okay, let me ask you this. Who do you think has the most troops?
Well, we have the most troops.
No. I'm not talking about the professional military, okay?
Right.
I'm using troops in the broadest sense of the word. Who's got the most troops, the Bolsheviks or the families and friends of the convicted?
Oh, the friends and family of the convicted by far.
Exactly. The biggest problem we've got is they don't know it. Like, you know, I met Larry Rice's daughter once. So it was my favorite ex-wife at the time, okay? And these poor people, there was about 17 of them. And, oh, I forget, Stephanie Rice was her name, okay? No, or something else, and she's married. And she asked the audience, Diane and I were sitting in the back, do you, you know, does anybody here knows how to introduce legislation? And I said, well, yeah, I do. She said, okay. And I started to explain it, and she said, wait a minute. She said, let me finish this. He said, and then you come up here, and you take over this class, and you tell us what we need to know. I said, okay, fine. So I went up there, and I start explaining about the largest voting bloc in the state. Other. Now, these people, there are 17 of them, and they're all there. You know, they've got this, you know, kicked puppy look. You know, they're just beaten down, and the system has, you know, basically mistreated them and all that, and their loved ones. And I wish I'd have had a video of it, because when I started talking and I started explaining how much power they actually had, they started sitting upright in their chairs, their eyes started to sparkle. It's like, yeah, we can beat these people. Well, mm-hmm. We just need to do that on a national scale. The beauty of it is once people understand that that's all they have to do is fight information, vote as a bloc, change the laws, by changing the lawmakers. And well, you just get, you know.
You said somebody in Canada is doing that right now, right?
Yeah, there's a guy named Martin Waterman. He's a screenwriter. He teaches at University of Victoria. He teaches screenwriting there. And he's putting together, it should be on any time now. In fact, you can probably find it on the internet. It's titled Taking Back Justice. And it basically shows you, okay, here's the problem with all these current programs. They tell you what the problems are, but they don't give you any solutions. Well, this particular program is going to be, here's the problem, here's who's causing it, and here's how we fix it. And one of the things they're going to be hammering over and over is the largest voting bloc.
That's interesting. Now, is there a parallel effort in the states that you know of?
Doesn't need to be. He's already got a guy in France that's trying to sell it as a worldwide program. A guy named Michel Zargo owns 12 Tribes Entertainment. It's going to be aired in the United States.
Wow. Well, something's got to happen because this pressure cooker is almost at the point of blowing its top. So there has to be something done fairly quickly. We got another caller from California just. Let me bring Gary on here. Gary, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, and, welcome to the program.
And as I'm listening, you guys, you know, you're talking the Constitution, and we got to sort of get back to it in some way. But the Constitution, the first thing you got to do is, who was the Constitution written for? And you go back and you read, I think it's a declaration, one of them anyway, says that it was written for their posterity.
Okay, that posterity, means right.
Their kids, their offspring, and on down. So that meant it was written for one kind of people. We're not that anymore. This country right now is being flooded with aliens, you know, illegal. And they're a different kind of people. And all you have to do is give them free crackers, and they're ready to go your way. So there's some problems within the Constitution that need to be taken care of. You know, I was watching...
Kurt Doolittle, with his propertarianism, is drafting a replacement Constitution that takes care of all that. John Jay in Federalist Paper Number 2 very clearly defines who an American is, and it's not what we have today by a long shot. And that's part of the problem. Diversity is a way to set you up for failure, and homogeneous is the only way to succeed as a nation. You cannot succeed as a multicultural society. It just doesn't work. It just does not work, period.
What's amazing here, Pastor, is they say this guy over here is black, and what we used to do, they say, is, you know, how terrible we were. They're not going to the Constitution. They're just saying they're going by feelings. You know, I think you gave a show on feelings one time. You know, what feels good. Now, I know when when,
well, that's the effeminate nature. They've effeminized our society. They've killed off most of the guys with high testosterone and manliness in our wars. And the ones that are left have been raised by mothers, thanks to the divorce court and all this other bullshit that's going on. So now you got a bunch of guys that don't know how to be men. And that's the effeminate nature. Here's a good case in point, okay? A video was just shown how in Virginia the board of directors, or whatever they called themselves, commissioners, whatever, were sitting around the horseshoe voting on whether they're going to allow guns at this rally in Virginia. And I wrote to the guy that put the video together. I said, did you notice that as you panned that group of commissioners, whatever they are, I said, how many of those the founding fathers would never have allowed to sit in public office? Most of the people in that room were either females or non-white men. Non-whites and females. And you wonder why we're screwed up. I mean, they're the very people the Founding Fathers says you don't let them anywhere near a ballot box, a jury box, or a public office. Because they don't represent us. Okay? Only white men, and only white men who are qualified, by the way, not just being white, but white men who are qualified, the Founding Fathers said, they're the only ones that get to make decisions. And the older I get, the wiser my parents get, but also my ancestors get. My ancestors saw this disaster in Europe before they left there. When you open up the door to just letting any old buddy, and with emotionalism and, oh, come on in, you can be part. No. The Founding Fathers understood that that may sound good, but it doesn't work. And so they had very specific rules and qualifications, and for a damn good reason. And we're living proof now under this cacistocracy that we live under as to why there were qualifications. And I'll tell you what, my personal opinion is we got to get back to the basics. We got to get back, and if it takes the friends and family of the convicted, then that's a standing army. Whatever. I say hallelujah. Grab your guns, Katie, bar the door, and let's go. Let's get back to the basics that worked and turned us into one of the most powerful nations ever when we were moral and when we were homogeneous and we followed the rules the founders set up. We're not there now. We are so far off that track. I think Mike is right. The only way to get back on that track, if this largest army. I like that. I had not heard that before, but I like that. Friends and family of the convicted. What better group of people to have a dog in this fight than that group?
Well, you know, Pastor, we were watching a movie the other night. It was on TV, and it was where all the people were, everything was like it was a early movie where there was no color, and everybody was moral. Everybody followed constitutional type activities. The whole thing was like it was in the old days, you'd say. Then all of a sudden something happened where, like, this woman, all of a sudden she was in color, and everybody put her as an outcast. What did she do? She was a good mother, old-fashioned type, person as we would understand. And all of a sudden, when she turned color, she went to this guy, and he also had turned color, bad color. And she left her husband, and he left his wife. All of a sudden, when you turn color, that's because that seems to be the new way as it was presented. And you go, in other words, you're leaving the old-fashioned way. And everything, just because you wear color, it was like what we're doing now. There was no morals. People kissing in the street, doing all kinds of crap like they do on the beach sometimes. I'm sitting here watching this way. The non-color was the old-fashioned way. That's what I wanted. That's what we want. We want that back. And it was a movie on it. It was this hidden secret. You know, I forget the name of the movie. Elka knows, but it's the hidden secret. It was like in the movie, you could see. I wouldn't want that. But it was the hidden in the movie. It's like when you read the scriptures, and you know, when Christ talks about the trees and things of that nature, he's talking about people. They're hidden.
Yeah, I know. Yep. Tommy, we haven't heard from you in a while, bud. What's on your mind?
No, I mean, I'm just listening.
Okay.
To chime in on that is going back to fixing the problems. Well, the problem is already here, and it's just going to get worse until people feel they have no other choice. If they feel they still have a chance to win the next election and hope that the Jews don't mind control the the next puppet, nothing's going to change. Only unless there's mass outbreak of mass sickness, mass violence. The problem is that arises from that. It's a vacuum because you have a lot of factions that will vie for power. Well, this is just to my understanding. When you play games or you watch a lot of movies of different things, you always notice there's always factions, because right now there's really only a few factions in the country that run the country. You have the government, federal, state, and local. They are factions of each type. And then you have gangs, street gangs. Then you have your mafias. Generally, that's pretty much what it comes down to, people that can exert violence. And the thing is that the wild card is the individual with firearms. That is what separates us from them, pretty much. And not to say that the individual is always going to be moral or say the good guy all the time, but it's a wild card that they are scared of. Because the feds, they do a lot of intelligence on gangs. They have entire task forces just on gangs alone. Yes, in most gangs, they reside in the cities. Now you have rural gangs, but most of them work in, machine shops and that kind of stuff, so they really don't have any colors, per se. So to get to the point, when the crap hits the fan, Virginia could kick it off. I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh crap, I can't bring my gun now because they're going to search my car. I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen with Virginia, because I think it's a death trap walking in there. I think with that governor, he's got an itchy trigger finger and he's just looking to start something, and then say, oh see, look at all those crazy gun people. We need to take guns away. The problem with that is they think that the optics matter anymore. John Mark did a video yesterday, and he says optics are useless because people who can exert force, the only opinion you want to listen to are the people who can exert force. And I says, it's always been at the top of my head. I says, the guy nails it every time. I'm thinking about it, and I tell people, why do you care of what simpletons think of you? They don't care. They're not, they're going to sit on the fence and do nothing. Well, are you at least preparing? Are you at least putting food aside? Are you at least, do you at least have a firearm or two? And do you train with it? What it comes down to is that when these factions vie for power, and they will, because right now the government is the strongest faction, but with the power on, when the power goes off, they are they're pretty much back down to the gang level. So they can't spew their propaganda, because propaganda is one of their most effective tools, but that's not working very much anymore either. So when they're coming around saying, we're going to take your livelihood away, and we don't care that it violates your constitutional rights, we don't care anymore, well, the majority of people that have guns, which is the right wing, the majority, because there are a lot of left-wingers who own guns, they just won't tell you this. I always assume my enemy is armed. I never assume that they're as stupid as they look. because that's a fatal mistake. I just tell people, look, things are going to get real dicey, I think, I would be surprised if we even have an election end of the year. I'll be real surprised. If we do, the outcome is going to be bad either way. Doesn't matter if Trump wins or not.
Right.
The left is guaranteeing there's going to be bloodshed if Trump gets in again. They're guaranteeing it pretty much. So I tell people, look, if we can all vote the idea that that Mike has, that's a pretty cool idea. I think it's cool because it's like change the lawmakers. Well, how about we get rid of all these useless laws and just put people in prison for the government to just go make money on? It does nothing.
Well, I like an idea that just popped in my head that kind of marries proprietarianism with John Mark and Kurt Doolittle and what Mike just said with friends and family of the convicted. The thought I just had is I'm going to run for monarch of the United States, and I'm going to reverse all of those convictions and restore rights. I am truly a Second Amendment guy. Anybody that knows me for the decades that I've been around, they know damn well what I stand for. And I want everything that everybody here is talking about, restoration of rights, and get rid. In fact, I would overturn a lot of these convictions. I would have a special task force and go into these different prisons and reopen every case and find out if it was a true conviction or if there was any culpability by the prosecutor, the judge, or anybody else, and go after them. If there was any misprism during that trial, go after them instead of the guy that's in jail. We got a lot of political prisoners. But everybody that's been released, they get all their rights back. The Second Amendment is sacred. It won't be infringed in any way, shape, or form. And anybody that does, I would put them in prison. I would send my men to go round them up, the provost marshal and the military, and I would round them up and put them in prison. Any government person or a person in uniform that violates the rights of the people will be put in prison themselves instead of us put them in prison.
Yep.
I like that. I'm going to run for monarch, an elected monarch. I'm going to be a beneficial, righteous monarch that's elected, not a dictator, an elected monarch with a body of elders from every state that watches every move I make. And if I get out of line, I can be deposed and they can elect another monarch. And the very first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to overturn all of these convictions and restore the rights on all the convicted felons. Because, first of all, we got way too many felonies. They made a laughing stock out of the term felony. I had a cop tell a friend of mine one time that, and this was a woman. This is a woman that's never even got so much as a parking ticket. And yet they charged her with a felony because she touched him on the shoulder with her finger. This is what kind of pussies we have in uniform today. A woman touched him on the shoulder with her finger, has never been convicted of anything so much as a parking ticket, and charged her with a felony. Felony means nothing anymore.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing more for these little dictators on the bench, and the Jew-run prison system to go sit here and say, oh yeah, another one bites the dust. There you go. It's a racket. It's nothing more than a giant mafia.
Guess what else I would do? I would dismantle the entire prison system.
Oh yeah, it would be gone.
Okay, I would dismantle it because caging men and women up like animals for years and years and years is the stupidest idea that was ever invented. The Bible says you have either restitution is one form of punishment, restitution to the victim, not to the damn state, and execution. That's it. That's the only two forms of punishment that are allowed. And they're very swift, they're final, and they don't require people being caged at our expense and treated like animals. What do you think, Mike? Do I have a chance to run for monarch? What do you think? Would you vote for me to be monarch?
If you can get on the ballot, sure. Okay. You left out something. The Bible also authorizes the whip.
Yes.
Yep.
Corporal punishment.
I know that works because when I was in Terre Haute, the federal prison there, we had about 9 stabbings a month. It was like, it was a gladiator school. And the guards who caused the problems were never the ones who were the recipients of physical violence. And the reason was, you could stab another inmate, you'd get some more time, they'd lock you up. But if you so much as put a hand on a guard, and I can remember distinctly this one guy, he tried to cop a feel off some nurse or something. He kind of grabbed her by the boob or whatever. And they took him up to the hole. It was right across from the cell block I was in. And you could hear him for hours. Whack! I give! Whack! No, I give! I mean, they beat on this guy for hours. Well, that's why you didn't attack guards. You only attacked other inmates. And it's a much better system, because when somebody knows punishment's going to be swift and sure, and that it's going to be painful, as opposed to just boring you for a few years, people have a tendency to behave themselves. And which brings us to another issue here, because I heard the word, I'm listening to some of this about gangs. Gangs are merely a response to a legal system that doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very good point.
That's actually a really good point.
Yeah,
well, the guy who came up with it was the one who wrote the book, Gangs of New York. But that one, I quoted from, it's The French Quarter. Because in the 19th century, he wrote 3 books. He wrote Gangs of New York, The French Quarter, and The Barbary Coast. And in The French Quarter is where he pointed out that gangs are a response to a legal system that doesn't work.
Well, when I get to be elected as monarch, I'm going to hire you, Mike.
Well, the first person you got to hire is somebody to get you on all the ballots. That's going to be the hard part.
Well, tell me if I'm wrong, guys. Maybe I'm delusional here, but here's what keeps going through my mind, because I look at this complete anarchy that we're in the midst of here, and it takes me back to my reading of history. When Rome became as corrupt as we are today, it was the legions and the generals that said, to save the Republic, we're going to have to go in. Okay? It was considered so taboo for a standing army to march on Rome. That was considered like treason. You could actually get executed for that. So for the generals to sit there and say, our Republic is dead if we don't rise up and do something, and they would march into Rome and they would clean house and start all over again, and they actually, I think it was at least twice, they saved the Republic by doing that. Maybe I'm wrong, but I see us at that critical of a point. If we don't have something similar to that happen, I don't think we have enough time left for anything that even resembles a standard way within this, quote, system. First of all, they rig it. Like you said, they can go in and they can plant child porn on your computer. They can get somebody, a confidential informant, to lie under oath, or they can even get cops to lie under oath today. They lie. They call it test the lying. They're not even ashamed of it. Just like the Bible says, they don't even blush. Prosecutors lie under oath. Judges lie. Attorneys lie. Cops lie. Witnesses lie, because there's no penalty. We used to have perjury. When I was a boy, I used to read in the newspapers, even in high school and grade school, you would read in the papers where some guy got charged with perjury because he perjured himself under oath. I can't remember the last time I heard anybody held accountable for lying under oath. So we don't even hold them accountable at that level, let alone committing murder and blackmail and planting of evidence and all this other horse shit that goes on. Excuse my French, but I'm exasperated, to be honest with you. If I was back in the days of Rome, I'd be sitting there going, General, you got to march on Rome. you got to march into the swamp and clean the swamp, and that's going to take force at mm-hmm. this point. These people are psychopaths. They have no remorse. They have no conscience. They have no feeling of loyalty to this country, to our founding fathers, to the documents of this country. They don't respect the law, and they don't even consider any kind of retribution that will ever come to them, because it's run by psychopaths at every level of government. It's all part of the crowd, just like George Carlin said in one of his comedy routines before he decided to depart this world, probably with some assistance. But he did a comedy routine where he looked at the audience and he said, "This is a great big game, and you're not in it, okay? This is a great big club, and you're not in it, people. You're not in it. And we're not in it." You know, just like you said, Mike, you should be have all your rights restored, and you should never have even had to have gone to prison, because there should have never been anything like those clinics ever allowed. I mean, it's ridiculous. Murdering a child is murdering a child. How could some pompous asses calling themselves congressmen draft a piece of paper, just like that moron in New York did recently, and say it's okay to murder a child? Well, what kind of society are we?
Well, Pastor, I'll chime in for that. When they come after people's kids, because they do this already with Child Protective Services, but I'm going to take a step further. My prediction, and this has always been the back of my mind for the past few years, knowing how the escalation is with the gays, the trans, and all this debauchery, this filth. Look in just 5 years, they're now promoting pedophilia now. They're normalizing it. Well, what do you think they're going to do next with kids? They're going to snatch kids right from school. The government will go in, send a cop to go in there. "Oh, yeah, your child has to come with us." I don't think that they won't do this, because they're already telling parents that, "Oh, as soon as your child is in the school, you have no say in what we can inject into them." Like, this is the stuff that's going on, and next thing you know, they're going to be taking kids off the street, and not just homeless kids we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, American children that, if, God forbid, you said something on social media, and they'll use that against you. And the problem is that they think that's a foolproof plan. That's dangerous. That's extremely dangerous. And I'll give you an example. There was an article, I think this happened like a year or two ago, in Texas. A woman waited outside a Child Protective Services place, waited for the woman that had her kid taken away by lies, and she shot her with a bolt-action rifle, killed her. Now, obviously, that's a little extreme, but what drove this woman to go do that? Because her kid got kidnapped by the government. So, you know, they use the courts all the time to take you know, kids away from dads, and of course it's not always you know, the dad's a bad guy or whatever. Obviously, there's always, every case is unique to some degree. You know, most cases a lot of women lie, but it goes both ways. But they're going to start that next, and they're going to start putting this stuff out to say, "Oh, your parents, if they don't agree to the LGBTQ program, agenda. whatever it is, then the government should be able to take your kids away." Now, I've heard leftists say this before. Now, who is constantly telling the president what to do all the time? It's mostly leftists. And the funniest part is that, if this man understood the power he has right now, he could literally change his country just like that. If he understood and just did it and said, "Screw it, if they kill me, they kill me," because they've already tried so many times, and it's been most of them have been foiled, but I honestly believe that I think they got to him in a different way, because blatantly taking out the president is just in your face of whistling to the right wing, and even to the middle, to say, hey, take up arms because this government's out of control. My honest opinion is that they're going to come after kids next if things don't escalate to the point of forceful change. Now, with West Virginia coming out and giving a lifeline to these other counties to now vote to leave peacefully, problem is that they're going to rig that. But I like the symbolism behind it, because it says at the time we are in a civil war. We are officially in a civil war. When another state says to counties, please come over to us. We see what you're going through. Please come on over. We'll try to negotiate with your government so you guys can leave. We'll redraw state lines. That is Civil War II. It just hasn't gone hot yet. And it's not going to retract. It's just going to get worse. So I saw that. I said, That's another sign from Yahweh. It's already here. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's just that it came to my mind that Mike talked about friends and family of the convicted, but you could add to that group people that have been abused by Child Protective Services.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of friends and family too.
They traffic children. I mean, they've been caught doing it. I mean, so it's like it's not just people in the prison system. It's you have victims of Child Protective Services. You have victims of all kinds of different things. Anything by the government. The government is the big, bad, evil wolf. So even your enemy on the street that's not part of government will probably join up with you when times get bad, because they're going to take down the common enemy. And the interesting part is all those so-called bad people out there, they won't be bad once you remove 90% of the illegitimate laws, minus, you know, hey, you can't murder somebody, can't rape, can't steal. If most of those people never did any of those things, they're just as normal as anybody else.
Yeah, I've known people on the inside besides Mike, and they've told me that there's an awful lot of people in there for stupid ass reasons.
Yeah, like possession or something. Like,
complete idiocy.
It's absurd. When people keep saying that we're in a free country, we're no longer a free country. I want to slap people when they say we're such a free country. Really? That's why you need permission from the government to go protest? Yeah, right.
Well, wait a minute. We've got 25% of the world's lawyers, and we've got more people behind bars than even the communist nations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we're number one.
That's all bullshit. So are we just smoking wacky weed here and delusional, Mike, or what do you think?
Well, that's hard to determine. Like I said, Dan, your biggest problem is going to be getting on the ballot.
I know I'm not going to get on the ballot. That's why it's the cartridge box is the only thing that is left. If the jury box and the ballot box are corrupted, the only thing left is the cartridge box. Mao Zedong, I have no respect for, obviously, but Mao Zedong was right when he said all political power comes from the end of a rifle. That's just where it boils down to. Who's got the force? Who is going to enforce their will? The founding fathers carried muskets to church. After Lexington, they carried muskets and defended their right for liberty and freedom. Thomas Jefferson, I believe it was, it said, the tree of liberty must be nourished with the blood of tyrants and patriots from time to time. In fact, I think he advocated a good revolution every 20 years in order to keep things... running smoothly. So
yeah, your only problem there, Thomas Jefferson never did a day in uniform.
Well, that's true, he didn't. But
hey, you got to be a little careful. Here, I'll give you another example. Okay, this is one of my favorites. I'm sure you know who Wayne LaPierre is.
Yes.
Okay. Now he wrote an article. I was a member of the NRA once, and after I read this article, I thought, you piece of garbage, okay? I spent 4 years sweating under a steel helmet in a line company, and I got to read this crap about how anybody with a felony conviction should do 60 years behind bars if they went and bought a gun, okay? So I look up this jackass. And in 1969, when his number came up for the draft for the Vietnam War, his family doctor said he had a nervous condition, and so he got out of the draft, okay?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Wayne LaPierre, who's, you know, big fan of the Second Amendment, was a draft dodger.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. So...
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He's a bootlicker for you know for the police state. He's the guy that wanted to. He's the guy I think who got the electronic NICS system, which is a registry, but they can't legally use it against you. He's the guy that's cheerleading. Yeah. We need more background checks. Excuse me. Where in the Second Amendment does it say background checks? Anytime you use background check, it equals registration. And then he says, we have to fight any registration laws because registration leads to confiscation. Well, what do you think the ATF has been doing and the FBI has been doing?
I'll tell you. Oh, Lordy, Lordy. Well, hey, Mike, I wanted to ask, people that might want to use you or contact you for legal help, should they go through Peter Simpson's information or you know, his phone and website, or do you have some other way of getting a hold of you?
No, just have them go through Peter Simpson's website because he's actually my, you know, in addition to the publisher of some of my books, he's actually my screener.
Oh, okay.
Because, a lot of people, they call up and they want help, and, oh, well, I don't want to have to pay for your help. we spend all our money on lawyers, and I tell people all the time, you know what? Just because you got screwed at Subaru doesn't mean Ford owes you anything.
Oh, that's true. You know, that reminds me, because I'm a certified natural health professional, it reminds me of way too many of my friends and family that this applies to, but they will exhaust all of their efforts and all of their money going through the medical route, and when the doctors send them home to die, then they want the naturopathic doctor to help them out, but by then they don't have any money. They want it to be done for free, or you'll give them some modality that would help them out. Well, I can't afford that. Well, wait a minute. Did you ever think maybe you should have tried this first or long before you became a pauper, when everything the medical profession was doing wasn't working? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So going through Peter Simpson's website would be the way to get a hold of you for any assistance.
Yeah, because, there's... And then again, quite frankly, somebody that wants my services, they gotta have some backbone.
Yeah.
Because if you're a trembler and you go into a criminal court, federal or state, they're going to chew you up and spit you out the minute they see fear. But if you go in there and you know what you're doing, see, what I run into quite often is what we call patriot mythology. They have all these wacky ideas, like the fringe on the flag means it's an admiralty court. You know, no, it doesn't. It means the flag is nylon and they don't want the edges to curl up there and it's hanging on the wall in the courtroom. And then I get people who make decisions they're not qualified to make. And, in fact, did you ever hear of a guy named, they call Big Beach?
No.
Okay, he's a black dude out of Atlanta. And I took his case for a couple of years, and I told him from the beginning, that you can't make a mistake. What I tell clients all the time is, the fox can make 100 mistakes. The rabbit can only make one. And he made a mistake, and I would have had him out a year or two ago, and as it is now, he gets out in 2032. So, You know, when people come to me, if you don't have gonads, and if you're not willing to do as you're told, and you're not willing to fight a case, and you're going to be an advice prostitute where I'm butting heads with your lawyer. I mean, I get people all the time that say, well, can't you work with your with my lawyer? And I tell them, no. Well, why not? Because if I try to work with your lawyer, I'll spend 10% of my time fighting your case and 90% of my time fighting your lawyer. Back, yeah. Let me give you an example. Say you're sitting there in a court, and you're looking at 30 years, and the attorney knows he can get you out of it. But if he makes the move he knows he can make to get you out of it, and there's a chance of him losing his bar card, or at the very least becoming a pariah amongst his fellow sharks in the legal profession, what do you think is going to happen? You going to do the 30 years, or is he going to take the shot?
Oh, you're going to do the 30 years.
Exactly, and people don't understand this. I mean, every time I turn around, there's some lawyer that's trying. In fact, this guy down in Georgia I was talking about earlier, it's Michael Barr. Well, he's got a girlfriend named Nadia Diaz, and everything I did for him that she told her lawyer that she wanted adopted, he was fighting with her. And on one of them, we got him on the ropes. But the attorney won't do as he's told.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have to excuse me. I'm getting over a sore throat. And every once in a while, I've got a cough.
Oh, that's all right.
A lot of this stuff, it's going to be, I call them self-solving problems. I know people are all upset about, the way the government's going and this, that, and the other. But, I've been hearing this since I got out of the Army in 1964. The world hasn't come to an end yet. And there's ways to fix it. And, the solution is fairly simple. I mean, you guys picked up on it immediately, friends and families of the convicted. But
yeah.
somebody's got to get the word out. They have to know. Yes, you're the largest voting bloc. You've got the most power. And if you want the laws and how they're applied changed, change the lawmakers.
Yeah. Well, for years I've told people about your discussion with me on the air. Like I said, it was, 17 years ago now. At least 17 years. But you used to talk about two kinds of men in this world. Do you remember that?
Yep, there's the warriors and the merchants. And the merchants run just about everything. And the merchants are only concerned about the bottom line, and the warriors are concerned about the old values like truth, justice, honor, that sort of thing. But the merchants are running everything.
Yep. But you finished it up with, in the end, who wins?
Well, the warriors do.
Yeah.
Well, not just that. One of the other things I tell people all the time, because everybody wants to reform Congress and get them to do their jobs. That's not going to happen. And one of the things that people need to keep in mind that when there's warfare, doesn't matter whether it's with ballots or bullets, when you have any type of warfare and both sides are equally armed, both the peasants and the aristocracy, the peasants always win. Because there's more of us.
Right, right. Well, like you said, that still astounds me, friends and family of the convicted, and then throw in the people that have been abused by things like Child Protective Services. That's a huge number of people in this country now.
Well, let me give you an example, okay? Years ago, back in the early 90s, there was an organization on the East Coast called HALT, Help Abolish Legal Tyranny. And they were the kind of people you're describing. They've been victimized by family services and, all that sort of thing. In fact, that brings me to another point here in a minute. But these people, in like 18 months, they grew to 80,000 members. and politicians all over the East Coast, or if you'll pardon my French, shitting and getting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But then they made a fatal mistake. They started allowing lawyers to join.
Oh.
And in 18 months, they were out of business. Now, got another one for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Had a client out of Philadelphia. And, you know, we were talking about the Ku Klux Klan, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. I said, you know, you got all these people like, you know, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and all these talking heads, and they're all talking about how awful the Klan is. You even have a Klan watch down there in Alabama with it, Morris D's, okay? And I said, now, you've heard all this stuff about the Klan, right? And I said, yeah. I said, when is the last time somebody in a white robe and a hood caused you a problem? And he thought about it. He says, well, you know, I don't think anyone ever has. I said, okay, when is the last time somebody in a black robe caused you a problem? And he said, oh, about 2 days ago.
Yeah, good point. So, yeah, those the black robe ones are causing lots of problems.
Well, let me tell you one of the problems they've caused, okay? I'm sure you're familiar with Roe versus Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, have any of you guys ever actually read that case?
Not the whole thing, no.
Okay, well, here. I couldn't figure out what the foundation was for this thing. It's going back to the early 90s. So I get to reading the case, and I see that Harry Blackmun has adopted the philosophy of the Stoics, and that, you know, their philosophy was life didn't begin until live birth. And I said, well, okay, what's a Stoic? So we've got the encyclopedia set. Well, it wasn't a philosophy. Stoics, it was a religious movement. They were followers of the pagan god Zeus, okay? But Zeus, to the Romans, was known as Jupiter Olympus. But to the Hebrews, he was known as Baal. And what the Supreme Court actually did, which nobody seems to have snapped to, on January 22, 1973, they installed Baal worship as the official religion of the United States.
Yep.
Whoa.
Yep.
Yep. Why do you think they took the Bible out of the public schools? Yep, couldn't handle exactly. Competition.
That is also that statement that you're not a person until live birth is also in the Talmud.
Well, here's your problem with the Talmud, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those set of books were put together between 200 and 600 A.D., they've got commentary on all sorts of different things written by all different people. And some of it, yeah, they're pretty vile, and some of it makes absolute sense. Like, for example, one of the things, I was trying to figure out, okay, why is it you're not supposed to have, you know, red meat with a dairy product, okay? Well, there's a sound scientific reason, is that what happens is the iron in the red meat binds with the calcium in the milk, and they both just go through your system. By the same token, I'm reading this thing in the Talmud. You know, I used to go rack surfing down at the public library when I was in Chicago years ago, and I picked up a thing in the Talmud, and they're explaining that, you know, this business of not eating red meat with calcium doesn't apply to birds and fish because they don't give milk. I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Had nothing to do with, you know, some of the vile crap that they've got in other parts of that collection of books. So.
Right. Well, it's a sticky wicket, as they say overseas. You know, we've got a whole lot of problems. I don't want to keep you on much longer, Mike, because it's been almost 2 hours. I know you're not feeling, your throat's not doing too hot. So you tell me when you want to pull the plug.
Well, what time do you normally pull the plug?
Whenever everybody's done talking.
Okay, well, then why don't we just, let's bail out at 9 o'clock. How's that? I'm 10 minutes away from 9 by time.
Yeah, we can do that. Okay. Yep, we can do that.
All right, what else have we got?
Well, I want the main thing is I wanted people to be reintroduced to you since it's been so long, and how to get a hold of you if they want some of your good advice. Let me tell you the books, folks, if you're interested. Real quick, here's the titles of books that Mike's written. Brown's Alcohol Motor Fuel Cookbook, Brown's Lawsuit Cookbook, How to Sue and Win, Defending a Drug Case, Don't Let What Happened to Demetrius Big Meech Flannery Happen to You, How to Build a Junkyard Still, Prisons, Bloody Iron, Practical Knife Fighting, Sex, Money, and Power, The Bible Shows You How, The Criminal Defendant's Bible, The Bill of Rights Handbook, Are You Fed Up with Judges Accountable to No One? The Drug Defendant's Handbook, The Strength of Samson, which, by the way, that was a really good book. When Men Were Men and Women Were Property. Now, that'll get some comments, I'm sure.
that's for your mother-in-law.
that I remember talking about that one. That was funny. And Why You Have No Civil Rights and What You Can Do About It. So that's quite a list. That's the ones I know about. If you've got more than that, just let us know.
Well, here, I'm glad you brought up the Alcohol Motor Fuel Cookbook, because I want to show you how things can work if you know what you're doing. Okay? 1978. I want to learn how to make alcohol and run it in engines so I can benefit farmers, okay? So I call the ATF in Cincinnati and said, I want a permit to make alcohol. They said, oh, are you out of your mind? It'll cost you $100,000 and you'll have to fill out 2 inches worth of paperwork. I said, well, okay, what do I get for my $100,000? Well, call back tomorrow and I'll get you an exact figure. So I call back the next day and I said, well, it'll cost you $25,000. And you'll have to fill out a half inch thick of paperwork. I said, okay, send me the paperwork. Let me fill it out. Let me see if I can come up with $25,000. That wasn't going to happen, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So I start going up to the Wild Turkey Distillery in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and the supervisor there kind of took a shine to me. So I made trip after trip. He'd give me some directions, and I'd try it on the kitchen stove, and I'd fail, and I'd go back. He'd say, no, Brown, you left out this step, okay? So after, it had to be at least 10 or 15 trips up there, I get it together, and I'm doing the Alcohol Motor Fuel Cookbook. I did some seminars in the Midwest first, and I used the notes to write the book. So two of my partners and I, Jim Cofield and Harold Jenks, we go to this expo in Dodge City, Kansas. And Cofield and I are running a book table, and we're selling these books at $10 a pop in 1979 money, just literally hand over fist. We've got farmers 5 and 6 deep lined up at our table. Now, right across from us is an ATF agent. And I tell, when I hand somebody a book, I say, now the ATF's right there. If you want to get legal, he's the guy you want to talk to. And every single one of these farmers say, you know what? We have enough problems with the government already. Tell them to pound sand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That book sold over 80,000 copies through Mother Earth Dues. And the upshot was, the lesson to be learned here, is when I started in December of 78, before December of 79, the ATF rewrote its rules for getting an alcohol permit later that year because of my book. A permit was $10 and you had to fill out a half page form.
Wow.
Well, you can do the same thing with anything. See, like right now with the Second Amendment, yeah, if you know what you're doing and you go after the judges causing the problem, you know, we've got a really good shot of getting it back. I don't have any Second Amendment rights. I'm an ex-convict. I'm felon in possession. I'm looking at 10 years if I go down to the gun store and buy something.
Yeah. Yep. You know, it reminds me of when CB radio was hot back in the mid-70s, and they wanted us all to put in for a license to operate Citizens Band Radio, and they got swamped with so many millions of applications that they did away with the requirement.
Oh, and see, here's the same thing. if you can get to a jury and make a jury understand that Congress never had the authority to amend the Second Amendment, and if you can get past the judge lying to the jury, telling them you must obey the laws I give it to you. I'll give you an example. I had a radio program of my own here 20 years ago, and I did a two-hour lecture on the Second Amendment with everything we're just describing, and there were two guys the following week. They had caught these guys cold, felon in possession, and the jury walked both of them.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Jury nullification, huh?
Well, exactly. And the thing is that, you know, all these judges will tell you, that, oh, jury nullification, you know, will lead to anarchy, this, that, and the other. Well, that's total horse feathers. I mean, look at all the juries that nullified the Fugitive Slave Acts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, a lot of people think that's why Prohibition finally ended, because the government couldn't win a conviction. Because juries were saying that trying to convict somebody for having a drink of alcohol is ridiculous.
Well, there were too many of them. There were too many people violating the law. When you have enough people violating a law, then it's no longer a law because it's not enforceable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where we're at with the Second Amendment. I mean, back when I got out of prison back in 78, I had a parole officer. And this was in Kentucky. And Kentucky, well, I'm sure you've heard of the Hatfields and the McCoys and
oh, yeah.
All that. I mean, in fact, I got to tell you a funny one. When my parole officer basically told me they weren't enforcing the federal gun laws in Kentucky because they couldn't get anybody to indict, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I first got there, when I first got to Kentucky, oh, this was around, I think, 1971, they had a trial over in Richmond. Now, they had a county to the east of us, Jackson County. County was so poor, they didn't even have a courthouse. Anything they did legally, they had to come into my county, Madison County, and they had to use the court system there. Well, they had a gunfight at the Goose Rock precinct between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, these guys were pulling pistols and shooting each other, two dead, three wounded, okay? And so they got indicted. They take these guys to the courthouse there in Richmond. And, of course, now they had to get the jury out of Jackson County. Jerry Foreman was this great big farmer, great big bear of a man. And so the judge sends them out after all the evidence is introduced, and they come back in. And the judge says, okay, have you reached a verdict? And Jerry Foreman stands up and says, yes, we have. And the judge says, okay, what is your verdict? And this big farmer says, not guilty. The judge says, are you out of your mind? You know, there's two people dead, there's three wounded, there's all these laws that have been broken, and you're voting not guilty? And this farmer looks at the judge right in the eye and says, yes, we voted not guilty. The jury has ruled. It was a fair fight.
That's brilliant.
Well... Yeah, there is still some justice if you get the correct jury, that's for sure.
Well, it's not the correct jury, it's the people who know the truth. The
right.
truth is, now here, watch this one. You want to talk about overturning all these convictions? Any judgment obtained by fraud is a nullity, okay? And every time a judge turns to a jury in the federal courts and says, you must obey the law as I give it to you, he's obtaining a judgment by fraud, and that case needs to be set aside.
Mm-hmm.
Pastor Dan, I was just wondering if we could have Mike's website again, please.
Oh, go to Rommel, Rommell, law. RommelLaw.com. That's Peter Simpson's website, but he handles that kind of stuff for Mike.
Rommel, what again?
Law, L-A-W, law. Rommel Law.
Yeah. It's R-O-M-M-E-L-L-A-W, Rommel Law, and it should come right up.
Right, as in Erwin Rommel, the German
general.
As
in Erwin Rommel, yep.
Yep.
I couldn't spell that.
Yeah.
I don't write fast enough.
Yeah. Well, normally near the end, I get closing comments, Mike, but like I said, I know your throat's probably bothering you, so I'll take closing comments from you first. That way you can dive out, and then I'll get everybody else's closing comments.
I think I've been making closing comments ever since this thing started. So I don't have, gentlemen, I don't have anything else to say.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Mike, it was great having you on, and if you're up to it, we'll do it again sometime soon.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, Mike, take care.
Bye.
All right, Gary, any closing comments?
Well, I just wanted to say, when you guys were talking about child stealing, one time, I was married a long time ago to this one woman. Matter of fact, it was about 30 years ago. And she, of course, wanted a divorce, and she wanted to have the child, and she wanted to have me out of the picture, and she wanted total control. And the way she did that, she went right to CPS, you know, Child Protective Agency, and made some comments about me. Guess what? She had the girl, and she, you know, first now, I had visitation rights because I felt that was right. I should never have it. I should have had all rights. But anyway, so they said that I could go visit the child, but it had to be, because of what the ex-wife said, it had to be with supervised, you know, visitation. So I had to pay for somebody to sit there and watch me visit with my child. So after a while of spending the money and doing this, I thought, wait a minute. When this little girl grows up, she's going to think it's implanted in her mind, there's something wrong with my dad, because they have somebody there watching him. So I said, I ain't going to do this anymore. And I told him exactly what that. I said, because you're denting her mind against me. Well, because of all the stuff that CPS done and her mother, now this child, she's a little girl, is now a big girl, and she's not married. She's a full-blown lesbian. Thanks to the government, my child was trained their way.
Well, again, we have plenty of victims of this cacistocracy that we find ourselves under the heel of. So friends and family of convicted, friends and family of CPS abuse, friends and family of cops that have overstepped their jurisdictions. I mean, that's got to be a gigantic number of people, and it's probably why this Second Amendment thing is becoming so viral and so many thousands of people are up in arms, because it's like John F. Kennedy said, if peaceful revolution is denied, then your only alternative is violent revolution. All right? The government is shutting down dissent on every level there is. It's almost forcing our hand. That this thing could go violent. So,
well, you know, Pastor, there's one thing you said when you was talking to Mike and to the other person is about the end of a gun. This country was founded on the end of a gun.
Well, it's just common sense. All power is in the hands of people willing to fight for it. It's been that way since mankind has been put on this earth. That's not rocket science. That's just common sense. Even the Bible talks about that you can't come into a man's home to rob it unless you bind the strong man. All right, what do you think the Bible's talking about? All right, why do you think the Bolsheviks want to bind the strong man, meaning all of us armed friends and family of convicted, friends and family of CPS abuse, friends and family of military abuse? They want to bind us by taking away our teeth, which is our weapons. Okay, they know damn well that the people in this country are right at the boiling point. That was the whole purpose of the Trojan horse called Donald Trump. All right?
Well,
I'm telling you.
You see, the thing that the Bolsheviks are doing right now is exactly what they found out, for instance, in the Ukraine when they killed over 100 million people, okay? And when they went to Russia, what they done there, I mean, they've already experimented with all this stuff. and it worked then. So they have a strong feeling that it's going to work here. And right now it appears like they're doing a good job in fooling us. But then they forget about how we write down history, and guys like Pastor Dan and others are letting the cat out of the bag on them, and they're not having fun right now. And, well, they're having a little bit more than they should be having. And that's how they got the Trojan horse in there, is through fooling the people who are now being woke up. In Russia, they weren't woke up. So, you know, you look at how the monarch at the time was, I can't remember, Tsar or something, and him and what they did to his family.
Yeah, they murdered him.
Yeah,
they murdered him after they had already abdicated. That was like a year after he abdicated. He had already abdicated, and they shoveled him off to a farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere, and that's when they went down in the basement and murdered him.
Yeah, okay. They were daughters. I mean, they cut him up. It was evil.
No, well, they butchered him. They didn't just kill him. They butchered him, okay, because it was to send a message, and it was satanic. But you have to understand something. Why did they all of a sudden, after a year of him, after he abdicated, why did they have to murder the Tsar and his family? Because the Russian people were starting to figure out the Bolsheviks and what they had done. Because they are liars. They found out that they just wanted power, and they weren't going to do anything different than the Tsar. In fact, they were worse than the Tsar. The Tsar was actually kind compared to what the Bolsheviks were.
If you want to see what
they murdered the Tsar and his family, so the Russian people couldn't return to make him king again and return Tsarism to Russia.
Well, you just got to look at what Adam Schiff did. I mean, it doesn't make any difference how your politics are, but this guy, we had something on a telephone call from the president to the other president, and he played it. He even did a script, you know, had a script on it,
transcript.
Yes, and so that's what was said. So then Adam Schiff turned everything off so that he could read this before Congress. I mean, a lie. I mean, it was filth.
Yeah,
but and nothing was done to this Adam Schiff. And
nothing's
done
to any of them.
Yeah, this is where you said, you know, about the lies and the frauds and whatever. You mean a man can stand up there who took an oath to abide by the Constitution of the United States? He sits in a public office that you and I pay for. You and I are paying for everything this guy is doing, and nothing can happen?
Because the people forgot how to be warriors.
Well, he should be taken to court for fraud.
He should be in prison awaiting trial for treason is what he should be.
That's right.
That's what he should be waiting for, trial for treason.
There's nobody to do it, though.
All power comes from the end of a rifle. When the hell are people going to wake the hell up? All right?
That's when this country was founded, by the end of a rifle.
What makes people think bad that. People are going to stop being bad just because you ask them to? Let me know in history when that's ever worked, okay, would you? Because I study a lot of history, and I haven't found it yet. So when you find it, you tell me where, at any time, a tyrant stopped being a tyrant because you ask him to. I want
remember
to know when
the story.
Happened.
Remember the story of David and Goliath. You know, Goliath had all the power. David whipped his butt. So,
well, yeah, and it's just like the scripture says of these antichrists that control things now. Their vanity will be their undoing, just like it was for Goliath. Goliath was cocky and didn't think David had a chance, and David put a stone right between his eyes. And right now, it's happening all over again. This world government, this New World Order, this cabal of Satan worshipers think they've got the tiger by the tail, and that they're going to conquer us. But I'm going to read Malachi chapter 4 here real quick, because it's a short chapter, and it's going to tell you where we're at. For behold, the day comes, it burns as a furnace, and all the proud and all who work wickedness will be stubble. And the day that comes will burn them up, says Yahweh of armies, that it shall leave them neither root nor branch. But to you who fear my name or my authority shall the Son of Righteousness arise with healing in its wings. You will go out and leap like calves of the stall. You shall tread down the wicked, for they will be ashes under the soles of your feet in the day that I make, says Yahweh of armies. That's where we're at.
Amen.
Right?
Well, that's Master, where we're at. I got to get Boogie in, so.
All right, Gary. God bless, buddy. Take care.
Take care, man.
God bless.
God bless. All right, Tommy, any final thoughts, bud?
Yeah, well, it's funny how, because I've been thinking the whole time with this, when, you know, talking with Gary there, is I'll leave words of encouragement. Even though the times are very dark, I believe that's always the signs from the from Father Yahweh that in the name of Yeshua HaMashiach, that we are going to be victorious. And meaning that we just read in Malachi 4, we are exactly there, and it's a cycle. We are in the cycle of the Civil War cycle, or revolution, whatever you want to call it. It's going to happen. I believe it's going to happen when they overplay their hand and they just say, screw it, there's no more Second Amendment. Who cares about the votes? Who cares about that? That is when it is going to kick off violently. No votes are going to stop it. No, the president won't even be able to control anything at that point. He will lose complete control. He will look weak, impotent, and completely controlled. The government will have to hide. And then I believe you will see the works of proprietarianism that's going to come into play.
Right.
You're going to see the states come together. The free states are coming. They're going to come together, form a coalition, the free states of America, I believe, of some kind of that. And you're going to see the mostly blue states are going to have their own coalition as well. They're going to form their own country. That is what the split is. The split is going to happen. I believe it's gonna start between now and 2022.
It's already started.
Yeah.
West Virginia.
Boom,
it's already
right there.
Started.
I mean, I have never in my life seen that. I'm 38 years old. I've never seen something like that. And people think it can never happen. Well, the Virginias split like about 100 years ago, over 100 years ago. You have the Carolinas. You have the Dakotas. You have, you know, it's nothing new. And the best part about that, it's restoring the people's hope. And the best part is that even though violent confrontations is inevitable, we can prevent the most of it, I believe. But a lot of people out there, especially on the other side, and I include Republicans, by the way, because 90% of them are leftists, just running as Republicans.
Right.
So the political system is completely broken. It will not be repaired. It must be replaced. And so I give words of encouragement to people who says, you know what, the times are grim, but that's a good sign that the warriors are going to rise up, because the only way the cream of the crop rises is when the fire burns. So when people are comfortable, they feel there's no need to do anything. Well, now they're realizing the comfort days are over. They realize it doesn't matter if Trump wins or not.
Right.
He hasn't gotten a damn thing done other than he has building the wall, but it took him over almost 4 years to do it.
Well,
he's built
part of it.
Yeah.
He hasn't built the whole wall, and he has not diminished illegal or even legal immigration. In fact, he's actually come out as pro-immigration.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
the most ever. But
yeah.
I look at it this way. He is the last president. He's not the last Republican president. He is the last president of this current system.
Yeah, I agree with that.
My gut has been telling me this probably for the last year, reading a lot of books. Kurt Schlichter's books, I'm telling you right now, this guy is on point. you know their novels. It's called People's Republic, and then it goes to Indian Country. Those two books right there, you need to read those.
Yeah.
Because what's going on right now, Indian Country is it starts in the pre-phase of the American Civil War, and then it goes after there is the official split. So I highly suggest you read it. Trust me, it's a book you're not going to want to put down.
He was military too, right?
Yeah, he was a colonel during the Serbian Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. During the 90s, so he saw what civil wars are, and he's like, look, I hope this stuff never happens, but he sees the writing on the wall. And he's obviously not advocating for anything bad, but he says in his book, he says, considering the current events, and he's got books where he just mocks liberals. It's hilarious. So, you know, he's a pretty comedic guy, but very intelligent. So but like I said, it's, you know, in words of encouragement to the people is just stay the course, keep preparing. Father Yahweh is giving us our signs, and they will unfold, and the warriors, I believe, will be protected during the time. So just everybody be prepared. Don't lose hope. Even though things seem grim, the Virginia governor is actually doing us a favor, in my opinion. He's getting people off their asses. Pardon my language.
Yeah.
Because the more they keep backtracking, it gets people to say, well, we can kind of relax right now. No, we don't want that. We want the acceleration. The acceleration is going to force the normies off of the fence. And they're going to realize, oh, crap, I have no choice. Yes. That's exactly how the Founding Fathers had the same problem with. Trying to muster courage when the Patriots, who weren't even trained, by the way, back in 1775, they realized they have no choice. That's when they fought.
Yeah.
So it's already coming.
Yeah.
John Mark is predicting it like beautifully, and same thing Kurt Doolittle. These guys have just been, I've been following them extensively, and they're like, it's already here. This stuff's just accelerating. So
yeah,
but we're going to win.
All right, Tommy. Well, thanks for calling in, buddy. Yahweh bless your heart.
Yahweh bless you too, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for staying with us there. Again, that was Mike Brown, and you can get a hold of Peter Simpson, who will do the screening form if you wish to get any advice from him on defending yourself in court. The area code is 320. The phone number is 857-2400, or go to Rommel, as in Erwin Rommel, the German general. RommelLaw.com is the website. That's where you can get Mike Brown's books or get a hold of Mike Brown for consultation. And we also want to thank Tommy and Gary for calling in. Heavenly Father, we give you the praise, glory, and honor. We thank you for this opportunity to share, and we thank that Mike is still with us. We've lost so many of the good guys over the past decade, and we just lost General Benton Parton in Virginia several weeks ago. Personally, I got the honor to meet him, and I prayed that he had a great welcoming home when he got up there, but we've lost a lot of good guys, and it's always nice that guys like Mike are still with us to share. Remember the old saying that when an old man dies, a library burns to the ground. Well, Mike Brown is probably one of the best read libraries I've ever met. So, Father, watch over us and protect us. Give us clear guidance. Give us your Holy Spirit. Make it strong that we can see through any lies and deception, whether it be organized religion, organized government, organized medicine. All of these centralized organizations are not for our benefit. We're beginning to realize that. And as Tommy said, I believe the warriors of our race are starting to get the picture. I think they're starting to get the idea that this is a great big kabuki theater being played out to corral us and hurt us so that these globalists can take over. And it will be literally hell on earth if we don't succeed in overthrowing them. Malachi tells us that before you bring judgment upon this earth, you would send Elijah the prophet to warn the people. I believe that's happening right now. So we know that his judgments are right around the corner. We also know that he inflicts judgment on the peoples through his saints. That's us, his sons and daughters. Psalm 149, Psalm 91 all attest to that. Malachi 4 attests to that. Obadiah verse 18 attests to that. Ezekiel 25 verse 14 attests to that. A lot of witnesses. Yahweh could do it all by himself, but we also know that he works through us, his sons and daughters. So again, thank you, Father, for this chance. We ask for a blessing upon all of your children as we struggle under this heel and yoke of oppression. We pray for your coming to be soon to take the throne, because you are our true king. You are the true and only king that we've ever had. No man is worthy of that title, only you. And that you will rule with a rod of iron. There'll be no more arguing all over this stuff, because you will rule and you will dictate the law to us, and we will either obey or we won't be around. It's as simple as that. That will bring peace and prosperity upon the earth. We give you again the praise and the glory. We thank you for this chance. We ask for a blessing, and we ask for forgiveness for our sins and protection from our enemies. We ask this in Yahweh's precious name. Hallelujah.